ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय श्रीमद् भागवतम हम ये सब अनुवाद और तात्पर्य हम हिंदी में करें और श्लोक पाठ और संस्कृत श्रीमद् भागवतम स्कंद 3 अध्याय 21 श्लोक संख्या 12 जाता हर्षो पतन मूर्धना शितौ लब्ध मनोरथः गीर्भिस्त्वभ्य गृणात् प्रीति स्वभावात्मा कृताञ्जलिः These are points in the purport. Srila Prabhupada makes points that he's made in many other places. Of course, not in exactly the same way in other places. One point Srila Prabhupada makes here is that what goes on in the name of yoga nowadays is ludicrous. We see that people are having yoga for health so that they can go on enjoying sense gratification. It's completely the opposite of the purpose of yoga. Yoga is meant for yoga indriya samyamya. Yoga is meant for controlling the senses. आपको अंग्रेजी आते हैं ललित प्रभु नहीं वो अनुवाद यहाँ पर हो रहा है जो अंग्रेजी नहीं समझते पुरुषों जो सभ्य साची प्रभु के पास बैठ जाए और माताएं रसमूर्ति माता जी के पास जो अनुवाद करेंगे आपके लिए या सो योगा इज अल्टीमेटली मेंट फॉर रियलाइजेशन ऑफ द सुप्रीम पर्सनैलिटी ऑफ गॉडहेड बट ऑल योगा देयर आर वेरियस योगा प्रोसेसेस बट सीरियस योगा बिगिंस विद कंट्रोलिंग द सेंसेस But in the modern age, yoga is used as a process to make the senses more strong for sense gratification. So how it's become twisted so much. And also, yoga, of course, yoga can mean karma yoga, jnana yoga, dhyana yoga. But generally when the word yoga is used, without any other qualifying adjective, then it's generally understood to mean the Ashtanga Yoga system. But that has to be practiced very seriously. In Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna summarizes that process, beginning with the word Shuchau Deshe Pratishtapya. One should establish oneself. Go and reside in a pure place. And people are doing yoga in the middle of the big city, which is meant only for sense gratification. These big cities are established only for the purpose of economic development and sense gratification. Without any consideration even of bodily health. What to speak of aestheticism or spiritual realization. Spiritual realization is simply not on the agenda at all. And there are churches and temples, but spiritual realization isn't on anyone's agenda. Just like you'll see here in Baroda, there's in every society there's a temple. And whatever temple is there, people visit, whatever it may be. But they're not interested in spiritual realization. It's just some kind of, go to the temple, and whatever kind of God is there, you offer some incense and pray for some blessings, that's all. Spiritual realization, no one even thinks about it. So it's quite farcical or ludicrous, as Srila Prabhupada says here. Srila Prabhupada also makes an interesting observation. Generally we think of, for those who have heard of Patanjali, many people consider that they do yoga, which means a few stretches every day. But among the millions of people that do yoga all over the world these days, must be a few million people in America and Europe, Australia and all these places, very popular. And in India, they've also, in India, the yoga process, it's also been adopted to the Western dilution. It means that the actual yoga process has been going on since time immemorial in India. And then some yogis, so-called, went to the West and taught the watered-down version meant for sense gratification. And that kind of yoga has come back to India, where people do yoga for controlling the body, losing weight, and all these kind of things. So among the millions of people that do what they think is yoga, probably a very small percentage have even heard of Patanjali. But of those who have heard of Patanjali, mostly it's considered that his yoga sutras are meant to lead towards some kind of impersonal realization. But Srila Prabhupada in this purport comments that actually Patanjali is not an impersonalist. His system is meant to lead to darshan of the Paramatma. Which is a precursor, supposed to be a precursor to Vishnu Bhakti. Krite Yadhyayato Vishnu, that's described in Srimad Bhagavatam. But in Satya Yuga, the dhyana process was the Yuga Dharma, meditating upon Vishnu. Again in Srimad Bhagavatam. What is that? Dhyana Vastita Tadgatena Manasa Pashanti Yam Yoginaha. Who is that? That Yam Brahma Varanendra Rudra Maratastan Vanti Divyaistava. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is prayed to by all the great demigods, who is the object of all the Vedas, who is meditated on in trance by the yogis. So yoga is yoga indriya samyamya. It begins with sense control. It's yama, niyama. These are the initial processes, which in the modern so-called yoga system, they just chop off most of the processes. They chop off the, first of all, there should be some basic moral principles followed. That's the beginning. And the end is meditation on Vishnu and ultimately samadhi. But they chop all these inconvenient things off. And they teach asana, bodily postures, and this pranayama is also popular for health. It's very good for health. So we're told. Although I tried, it didn't make much difference. I guess I didn't do it properly. So Patanjali, ultimately, he's not an impersonalist, or not as serious an impersonalist as he's generally considered to be, according to his own writings. In the West, at the present time, gradually there's more interest in the spiritual side of yoga, or what the kind of, when we say the word spiritual, generally in ordinary circles, when we say the word spiritual, that means some kind of bogus, cheating, quasi-spiritualism. So in the West at the present time, among the followers or those who consider themselves to be yogis, there is an increasing interest in the spiritual side of yoga. And there's also an increasing interest in bhakti yoga and kirtan. All bogus. Not the real thing. People are not interested in the real thing. If someone, as Srila Prabhupada noted, if someone comes and offers you all nonsense in the name of spiritual life, people will flock to him. But the real thing, no one's interested. Srila Prabhupada gave the example that if a man can make a sound barking exactly like a dog, then people will pay money to go to a performance. But the actual dog in the street is barking and no one cares at all. So, the real thing, people are not interested. Another similar statement, probably from Tulsidas, Srila Prabhupada used to quote, Sach bole to mare late, jhoot jagat mohai. If someone speaks the truth, then people will come and beat him with sticks. And if someone tells lies and talks all nonsense, everyone thinks, oh, very nice, wonderful. Just like we see in the modern age, there's one certain supposed to be Swami who's calls himself Sri Sri something or other. And it's almost like, it seems like he studied the stereotyped cheating yogi. How to be what do they call that? The handbook, guidebook? Typical cheating, bogus yogi. Like he speaks in an effeminate voice, has a long beard, always smiles, and talks all kinds of rubbish that people like to hear. And no fixed line. He can say one thing, and 2 minutes later say something completely opposite, and if you point it out, he'll giggle. So he's perfect. He's perfect cheater. And people love him. He got it worked out. He charges them lots of money to go to his useless seminars. People love it. If you give them free, real thing, no meat eating, no illicit sex, no gambling, no intoxication, chant Hare Krishna, surrender yourself to Krishna, people won't take it. But if you cheat them, if you tell them you have to pay 2,000 rupees, that was a few years ago, it's probably 5,000 rupees by now. All these gurus, they all charge so much. There's one guru in South India, he charged 2 lakh of rupees for 2 minute darshan. What was that? I can't remember exactly. Someone went for it. Someone was stupid enough to pay the money. And then he went to him and asked him some question from Bhagavad Gita. And he said, well, when I spoke, the yogi said, well, when I spoke Bhagavad Gita in my last incarnation, you were Arjuna. He said, so you should have understood it by now. And that was the answer. 2 lakh rupees. Arjuna didn't have to pay 2 lakh rupees to Krishna. And if Krishna, he's Sarva Loka Maheshwaram, he doesn't have to take a 2 lakh bill, 2 lakh fee for giving darshan to anyone. So, Srila Prabhupada, in the course of preaching Krishna consciousness, is necessarily pointing out all that is bogus. Actually, in this verse, there's a description of Kardava Muni's ecstasy in having sakshat darshan, or direct vision of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, it's a great opportunity for describing in the purport, Srila Prabhupada could, and there are so many things you could describe on the basis of this. Srila Prabhupada could have described the nature of spiritual ecstasy. But instead, Srila Prabhupada chose to point out what the bogus yogas. Most of the purport is dedicated to pointing out the bogusness, if there's any such word, of the bogus yogis, the cheating of the bogus yogis. So this is required also. Prem Pracharan or Pashanda Dalan Duikarj Avadhut Karen Brahman. About Nityananda Prabhu, it's described that he wandered here and there preaching Prem, pure love of God, and Pashanda Dalan, Srila Prabhupada translates this as subduing the atheists. So there are various ways to subdue the atheists. Krishna, when he comes personally, the worst of the atheists, he kills them. That's not recommended in Kali Yuga, but they're cheating. That they are cheating should be pointed out. As the whole atmosphere of the world is full of cheating, it becomes more and more difficult to point out what is cheating, because people become so much inured to cheating that they think that cheating is normal. People think that cheating is just the way the world goes on. All the advertisements are meant for cheating people. On the advertisement, if they said, here's a Bridgestone tire, and it has this much strength, and at average speeds, it should last for so long. I mean, that would be what you could call an honest advertisement. But they don't do that. They show some beautiful girl who's got nothing to do with the tire. When you buy the tire, you don't get a beautiful girl. You just get a tire, that's all. And even if you do get a beautiful girl, what's it got to do? You need a tire for your car. So it's just absolutely, there's no relationship between a tire and a beautiful girl. But people in general are not that much interested in tires, but they are interested in beautiful girls. So they show them a picture of the beautiful girl and the tire, and the idea is that I guess people think they'll get a tire and they'll get a beautiful girl. Although they know they're not going to get a beautiful girl. They should know that it's cheating. But the advertisement works, must work, otherwise they wouldn't go on advertising like that. And they show a picture of some cricket player holding out a Pepsi bottle. You drink the Pepsi, what's it got to do with the cricket player? Nothing. he gets some money from advertising it. And maybe you think that, you know, this is the prayojan. Sambandha abhideya, now the prayojan of drinking Pepsi is that I'm developing my latent relationship with the cricket player. It's like a sadhana, drinking the Pepsi. But you can drink 10 crates of Pepsi a day, and the cricket player won't have any interest in seeing you, talking with you, or any such thing. And the cricket player has no interest in Pepsi anyway. He's only pretending to have because he's getting paid for it. And everyone knows. But still they go along with it. So people are used to being cheated. It's just a normal part of... It's considered a normal, acceptable, desirable, or even necessary part of life. That cheating is just absolutely the fabric of society. Here in Baroda, many years ago, there was a All India Science Conference. So, the professors were lodged in the student hostels. It must have been during the holiday. So I went around one evening with Life Comes From Life. And I met one professor and I asked him, well, what do you do? And he said, I go all over the world and I address these conferences. And he asked me, what do you do? I said, I'm distributing these books. These shows that evolutionary theory is all bogus. And he laughed and he said, well, we already know that. So I said to him, then why do you still teach? He said, well, we don't know anything else to teach. Is that not cheating? We know it's bogus, but still we teach it because we've got to teach something. So he openly admitted that his science is cheating. And you see that it's so deep in society that the heads of the most powerful countries in the world lie to their people and send their troops to war in a country on the pretext that they've discovered weapons of mass destruction. Thousands, maybe millions of people are killed. We don't know the actual figures because they're cheating. Later on they're found out. No action taken against them. They can openly cheat the people of money and their very lives, and life goes up. I mean, if you want to talk about it, you can, you know, have a Bhagavad Sapta on the cheating. I mean, there are levels of cheating. The whole material life is cheating, but there are certain levels. So the cheating gurus, people just think, well, that's normal. And they can't differentiate between who's a cheating guru and who isn't, because probably they think that the gurus and swamis and yogis are meant to cheat you. It's probably what they think, because they themselves are superficial. How is it that they're able to get away with this tire advertising and politicians promising so many things when you know they're just cheating you? They can get away with it because people get sense gratification. They get what they want. That's how they can get away with it. As long as the sense gratification is provided, then people don't even care if they're cheated. They've come to the level of animals. They're just on the sensual platform. So in the same way, in the name of spiritual life, if people get some spiritually feeling good, they don't care. That's all they want. I saw on YouTube or something like that some advertisement for the Bhakti festival that was held just very close to San Diego in Southern California, just before I went there. I was so bogus, so superficial. We're all feeling very happy here. Everything's wonderful. It's all so just totally superficial, no death threat. They don't want any deaths. They talk about bhakti, but they definitely don't want the Hare Krishna. Actually, devotees were going there, but they were kind of going with the flow. They didn't preach the actual philosophy. Then what's the use of going there? I asked the devotees who went there, and then why did you bother going there? They said, well, gradually, maybe next year, they'll come to accept us like this. In the meantime, we are just as, you know, we're just playing the game with them and pretend, you know, we're just smiling and being nice. So we're just being bogus with the idea that gradually we'll speak the truth. In the meantime, we're bogus. This is called preaching, is it? I don't know. I don't see that Srila Prabhupada preached like that. Yes. Gradually they'll accept what... If they think that we're as bogus as they are, then gradually they'll allow us to speak. But then if you speak what's to be spoken, then they'll throw you out. So you can tell some nice stories, that Sanatan Goswami and the Touchstone, like this. You can tell some stuff. One of our devotees gave a lecture there. He spoke on Sanatan Goswami, all nice things that people like to hear. But the actual fact, Nayam deho deha bhajam riloke kashtam kama narhate virbhujam ye tapo divyam putraka yena sattvam should yet Brahma Sokyam to Anantam. Yasmad Brahma Sokyam to Anantam. They won't want to hear that human life is not meant to be passed for sense gratification like the hogs and the dogs. One should perform divine austerity meant for leading to attain the position of unlimited spiritual happiness. But people are superficial. If they have this idea that if you feel good and you're a vegetarian, and I'm talking about the yoga crowd, if you feel good and you're vegetarian and you smile at everyone, that's spiritual. And there's this vague idea that everything is one with everything else. Of course you have to pay to get in. So it's expensive too, it's like $200 for 5 days or something. So, not exactly that everything's all one. The money has to come from your pocket to the organizer's pocket. Otherwise you're not allowed in. So, cheating. Simply cheating. And bhakti, it's, what they call bhakti, it means that you can worship Ganesh. Ganesh is the most popular god there. What do they know about Ganesh? They know even less than the Indian people know about Ganesh. All these people are... Ganesh is very popular in India. I saw that some report that the most... of all the gods on the internet, Ganesh is the most popular. Ganesh is king of the internet. Number two is Krishna. Is it? Or number three, Hanuman, something like this. So Ganesh is, by popular vote, the most popular. But if you ask any Hindu anything about Ganesh, what do they know? They have known hardly anything. Maybe they'll say he's an incarnation of Sai Baba or something like this. Because you have Sai Ganesh. This one devotee, I initiated him earlier this year. His name was Sai Ganesh, from a Brahmin family. His forefathers were supposed to be knowers of Shastra, but they named him Sai Ganesh. So you have Sai Ram, Sai Krishna. It's very offensive, actually very, very offensive. So, yeah, they think that bhakti means some kind of feeling, definitely a vague feeling. Vagueness is required. that Srila Prabhupada always referred to bhakti as a science. They don't like that. They don't like science. They don't like anything. They don't like rules and regulations. They think that rules and regulations are not spiritual. They have this idea that the real thing is just feeling. And what you feel, that's spiritual. But these are bogus ideas. People love it. People like to be cheated. When I first heard this statement from Srila Prabhupada, it was shocking. People like to be cheated. Most people like to be cheated, but it's a fact. It's a fact. Most people are not looking for the truth. No, most people are not sincere to know the truth. Most people think, well, I've got it all worked out. Another common line is that, well, I don't need anyone to tell me what to do. One devotee in America wrote to me, or wrote me, as they say in American English, that he's traveling around America distributing Srila Prabhupada's books, especially Bhagavad Gita as it is. So sometimes he meets people that he met before, who he'd given books to. And he will ask them, well, did you read the Bhagavad Gita as it is? And some people say yes, but generally if they say yes, they say, but I only read the verses and not the commentary, because I don't need anyone to give their idea to me. I'll make my own idea. I'll give my own interpretation. Such foolishness and egoism that there's a whole parampara of self-realized souls who have followed the spiritual discipline. Srila Prabhupada is a great pure devotee of Krishna, and you, idiot, who you're reading Bhagavad Gita lying down on your bed with your, you know, stroking your dog and drinking a Pepsi, and this is how you're reading Bhagavad Gita, and you're thinking that, well, my understanding, my interpretation is best for me, because I'm so unique. I don't need anyone to tell me. Such rascal. Becomes very difficult. This whole Mayavad, which is so prevalent in society, makes it very difficult to preach Krishna consciousness as it is. Because even in India, where there's some spiritual culture, there's still strongly the idea of going, that one should go to a guru, not as strong as it used to be. It used to be that every Hindu, they would have to be initiated. Every caste Hindu. That was a necessity. Everyone has to be, they have to have a guru. But then they had all these family gurus, which in many cases were not very helpful for anyone, in any way, except for the family guru. They made their living that way. Usually not a very good living. So, well, it depended on how many disciples they had, and how rich the disciples were, and how good a profile they were able to cut. Some of them were serious also, some of the gurus. But still that idea is that, but then you see guru, and then you have the stereotypical guru, the most popular guru of the present day among the so-called educated class in India, means the educated Shudras. Is this Sri Sri rascal. And he's like the epitome of a guru for the world. He's like Hinduism's ambassador to the world. He goes all over the world and talks all his nonsense. And people think, oh, he's a Hindu guru. And then you have so many others, like the Ayurvedic gurus and the yoga gurus. And they, They have this idea that the main thing a guru teaches is how to make your body healthy. So it becomes very difficult to establish the actual culture of self-realization. Becomes very difficult. People think that, well, a guru is just someone, well, if you like what he says, okay. If you don't like what he says, well, it's up to you. You can do whatever you like. This idea, you can just be free. Take what you like. Do it yourself. So it's a very contaminated atmosphere. It's very difficult to train people in Krishna consciousness. What discipline Karimamuni underwent to come to the stage of yoga that he was able to directly have darshan of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But discipline, that word is probably vanishing from the dictionary. It's, you know, self-discipline, accepting discipline. But without discipline, then there's not even human life, what to speak of spiritual life. So, my thought, considering all of this, it was, of course, it's Srila Prabhupada's thought, but I'm thinking it more intensely in recent times, is that, as you were discussing yesterday, it's very much required, or it is required, that kaumara acharet pragyo dharman bhagavatani ha. From childhood, children should be trained. And then there's some chance, of course, you have to see that the trainers themselves are trained. But there's a better chance if they're trained from childhood. Children, even then it's difficult because they may see the whole big society around them as they become older. And because the senses are very, the sensual attraction is very strong, they may become attracted to that. But proper gurukul training can be very powerful. One of my disciples who lives in Delhi, he put his son in a Sri Vaishnav school. Truly they accept, even though he's not from a Brahmin family, they accepted his son, who's about 5 or 6 years old, in a Ved Pathshala in Chidambaram, in South India. And what a difference to the boy in 6 months. He was a nice boy before, but you know, just like most nice boys, running around here and there. But he's like a little saint now. He comes up very respectfully, without being told, offers obeisances, chants Vedic mantra. I mean, he's imbibed the mood of a trained Sri Vaishnava Brahmana, the mood they inculcate from the very beginning. You saw that, Balaram? You saw him, Rishina Narayan's son? So, but then his younger brother, he won't go to the school. He's a real mastiwala. He's a different swabhav, different nature. So it's not that you can just force children to go. Birth is, their tendency is also important, as is stated in Bhagavad Gita. What is that? Mashuchas sampada partha. What is that? Masucha. Krishna says that the, well, there's the, for the demons, he says, dambu dharmi vimanascha koda parishavivacha. Agyana chabija tatsya partha sampada masurim. That the demons, they're born with the bad qualities. It's just natural for them to be arrogant, conceited, proud, Dhambo Dharma, so egoistic, angry, speaking nastily and foolish. It's just normal for them. They're just born with those qualities. Rashucha Sambhada Parta Daiva Abhi. I can't remember. Anyway, so Krishna told Arjuna, don't worry, Arjuna, you're not one of those demons. You're born with the divine qualities. So birth does make a difference. It's guna karma vibhagashah. Ultimately, the four varnas are decided according to one's quality and tendency to work and ability to work. But birth is a factor in that. And the general statement is kalau shudra sambhavaha. In Kali Yuga, everyone is born as a shudra. So, shudras like to be cheated. We should not cheat. We may also, in the course of our preaching, think, well, it's easier to cheat people. It's very difficult to give them the real thing. So, better we cheat people. And then we'll get many followers. But that's not our process. Our process is ekas chandra tamo hanti kinga taravano picha. Better to get one moon than many stars. Okay, I'll finish it. Any question, comment, protest? Please voice it now. Yes.
In this section,
Kadava Muni had a vision of the Lord eye to eye, yes. Dhruva Maharaj also had.
Both
started with material desires. So, what's the purport? We should encourage people with material desires to take up bhakti. That's true. We should. Became purified. Dhruva Maharaj became purified. Yes. Kadava Muni continued with his material desire. Well, it's not one shoe size for everyone. Everyone's an individual. They're not. Everyone is not in exactly the same consciousness. When you say bhakti yoga is a science, that doesn't mean that there's only one equation, 2 plus 2 equals 4. Different, it's different for different. The science is there, but how it's applied to different people. Therefore, there are general guidelines given in Shastra. But how they're to be applied in different cases will be different with different people. It's not that every case is going to be the same. Daksha also had darshan of the Lord. But he was, he remained more or less a gross materialist, or pious materialist, not even very devotional. So, what do you surmise from that? One should not pray for material desires. You know. Well, it seems that his material desire was not, Kadava Muni's material desire was not a very gross desire. I mean, he wanted to perform. I mean, he wasn't just interested in sex. He wanted to perform his dharma, or perform the dharma, which actually up until fairly recently in India, that was understood. Just like that, getting married is not just some for fulfilling lusty desires. That Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that, what is that? Dharma Smarya? Anyway, he said, remembering my duty of dharma, I accepted a wife. So he didn't say that I did it, I was feeling so lusty that I had to get married, but he said, remembering my duty or considering my dharma, I accepted a wife. So that was the general understanding. And that dharma is, in this world, is inextricably linked with artha and kama. That's also understood. When it said artha and kama, that again, that these are moderated by dharma. It's a very different understanding to what we have in the modern age. And the result of Kadama Muni's marriage was... Any suggestions? The Supreme Personality of Godhead came forth as his son, so obviously he was a very exalted person. From Kashyap, also the Supreme Personality of Godhead was born, and also many mixed devotees in the form of demigods and demons. He was an exalted person. So, life is complex. The basic principles are simple, but life is complex. So, we shouldn't expect that everything is stereotyped. Anything else?